This is number 0029, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you with another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0029. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File, we'll meet Dr. Saul Miller, who is the author of Performing Under Pressure. He spent a lot of time working with elite athletes, including Olympians, but what he teaches them can also apply to the rest of us.
You know, we're all performers, and the things we do in life that are, especially the things that are meaningful to us, I mean, we have a pressure to perform, to be good at them, to be the best we can be, whether it's relationships or job, you know, parenting, whatever. We all experience that pressure to perform, and I think the same techniques that we, you know, that we're working with elite athletes or elite performers, I mean, I work with musicians or I work with business executives, the same pressure that they're under applies to us all.
Brett Rounceville is the greatest employee in the world. He has a website to prove it, and he's looking for work.
The project's really similar to some of the employment contests that have been happening for the last year. The big one that started all off was the best job in the world, which was when New Zealand was running a contest for a job. So this is kind of flipping that idea on its head. And basically, companies can show up to the website and they post a one-minute video about their company and then the job description and whatever perks might happen to be involved. And they're basically entering in a contest to win me as their employee. And then the viewers of the site will be voting on who gets to employ me, basically.
We'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. We'll also have an idiot of the day and plenty of stuff. The guest Slater on this edition of the Stuff File program, the person who told you this was show number 0029, is Rob Kemp, the afternoon host at Shome 97.7, weekday afternoons from 1 to 4 on the Spirit of Rock. That again is Shome 97.7. You can also find Rob on Twitter at robkempradio.com. And oh, by the way, he goes by the name of Rob Kemp now. But back in the days when he was my producer on the radio, he was affectionately known as Bobo, the dog-faced boy. And then, of course, he went on to do Traffic and got a promotion. He became Captain Bobo. So, Captain Bobo, or Rob Kemp as you go by now, thank you very much for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get to the stuff, shall we? We got lots of it. And we start off with a story from down under in Sydney. Australian underwear company Aussie Bum has been monkeying around, and the result is a range of men's underwear made with bananas. The new eco-friendly banana range of undies incorporates 27% banana fiber, 64% cotton, and 9% lycra, according to Aussie Bum's Lloyd Jones. The banana fiber used in the underwear is made from a bark weave from the banana plant and makes the underwear not only lightweight, but also very absorbent, he said. Naturally, you can't really add any more banana fiber than that because it might get a little bit squishy, Jones said, adding that the wearer did not have to worry about real monkeys as the underwear does not smell like a banana. Well, they rarely do. Anyway, moving right along, this is a word of caution, folks. Don't invite an elephant to your wedding. Now, hiring an elephant for one Hindu wedding in New Delhi, India, proved to be a very bad idea after the pachyderm went wild and crushed 20 limos trying to get to a female elephant in heat in a nearby sugarcane field. He then mounted and attempted to mate with a truck and smashed through a shopping mall in a 15-hour rampage, causing over $300,000 in damages. Now, wildlife experts managed to finally bring him down with a tranquilizer gun. One elephant expert said, "It is a very powerful urge." Well, isn't it always? Yes. That's what makes guys, guys. On to South Carolina. A go-kart wasn't much of a getaway vehicle for a South Carolina man. The Herald Journal of Spartanburg reported that sheriff's deputies have arrested 29-year-old Edward Matthew Sweezy of Union after they stopped him last week at an intersection in Union. The deputy had heard a report of a stolen go-kart and turned on his lights and sirens after spotting it less than a half a mile from Sweezy's home. Sweezy is charged with resisting arrest, possession of a controlled substance, possession of drug paraphernalia, and public drunkenness. The deputy's report says the men struggled and the officer spotted a crack pipe and a bottle with three pills inside. The sheriff's report said they turned the go-kart over to Sweezy's wife. Meanwhile, on to New Jersey, police said a cook put a body hair in the bagel sandwich of a police officer who had given him tickets in the past. The cook was arrested on February 21st in the kitchen of Good Foods To Go in Evesham. The police officer ticketed the cook in March of 2009 when he failed to pull over for a traffic violation. The cook spent 4 hours in jail before his wife bailed him out and was fired from his job. The Courier-Post in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, reports police asked them not to report the incident for fear of copycat crimes. But since I'm talking about it right now, you know that that didn't work out in their favor. The paper published the story anyway. On to Owen Beach. At Owen Beach in Tacoma, Washington, it seems like just another beautiful day in the park. Birds are singing, children playing. Wait a minute. Is that a naked woman tied to a tree? A witness called 911 after seeing the woman, certain that foul play was at hand. A strange-looking man was spotted hanging out nearby. Several police officers responded to the call and blocked the park entrances and exits. But after talking to the man and the woman, it was determined that the bizarre rendezvous was completely consensual. No one was arrested. Hey, different strokes, different folks, right? What I'd like to know is, there's a naked woman tied to a tree in a public park. Now, even if it is consensual, it's broad daylight. People are out there. Isn't there something illegal about that? Something? Anything? Just checking. Okay. You know, there are people out there who like to go on Facebook and Twitter and vent and talk about their lives. I keep telling you on this program, and a few weeks ago we had a woman on talking about online etiquette, and she discussed it as well. I keep talking on this program that this is not a good idea. This is not something you should be doing. Well, it turns out, as this story will tell you, that free speech is not that free, especially when it's on Facebook. Now, in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, an East Stroudsburg University sociology professor, a professor, so you'd think they would know better, has been suspended for venting her workplace frustration on her Facebook page. Gloria Gadsden said she had been put on paid leave indefinitely following a meeting with a dean and university administrators after she posted to her Facebook page, "Does anyone know where I can find a very discreet hitman? Yes, it's been that kind of day." In another post, she wrote, "Had a good day today. Didn't want to kill even one student." Now, Friday was a different story. In their meeting, the dean asked her what she was thinking and suggested the comments posed a threat. She said officials referred to the fatal shooting earlier this month of three people at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, allegedly by a disgruntled professor. That would be Amy Bishop. Gadsden, who only recently started her Facebook account, has only 32 friends, none of which are students, so she was unsure how her messages wound up at ESU's provost office. Montana Miller, an associate professor of popular culture at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, who is an expert on Facebook, said the incident points out how our off-handed musings cannot be considered private in the age of social networking. She said there is no longer really a boundary between off-campus and on-campus, or personal and professional, all because of Facebook. And she added, "Facebook is one big open mouth, and at every turn, we put a foot into it." Well said, Professor. Well said. Meanwhile, in West Midlands, England, 83-year-old World War II veteran Fred Goff thought he had been suffering from arthritis. But as the aches in his right leg got worse, he went in for more x-rays. It was only then that doctors discovered the true source of his discomfort. It was a German bullet that had been lodged in his hip for the last 66 years. Fred said, "It has absolutely amazed me, and I was pretty shocked, to say the least. It was a big surprise to hear that I'd been carrying around this bullet inside of me for over six decades, but I can remember it happening, come to think of it." Really? You only thought of it now? When you got shot 66 years ago, you didn't think you got shot? You only thought about it now? Wow. Okay. Power of suggestion. That's the only thing I can say. Which kind of leads to our first guest, so let's get to that right now. Well, with the Olympics having been over for a little more than a week now, and here in Canada we're still basking in the afterglow of what took place in Vancouver, the Americans are also basking with the amount of total medals that they've won. On the program with us right now is Dr. Saul Miller, a psychologist. He has a book out called Performing Under Pressure, Gaining the Mental Edge in Sport and Business. And when one sees the Olympics and sees the kind of pressure that athletes have to go through day in and day out for one potential moment of glory that comes every 4 years, a book like this could probably help them and a lot of other people as well. Saul joins us through Skype-to-Skype communications, and I thank you, Saul, for being on the program with us once again. Saul, how are you doing?
I'm just doing fine. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
And you are right now, as we speak, in Bern, Switzerland.
Jawohl. I should yodel or something.
Now, during the course of the Olympics when they were on, I saw you on just about every single television network talking about one thing or another when it comes to the mental fitness that athletes have to be in to compete at that level. What you talk about through the course of the Olympics is something that is really an important aspect in everybody's daily lives, not just elite athletes, correct?
Absolutely. I think that's really a key point that, we're all performers, and the things we do in life that are, especially the things that are meaningful to us, I mean, we have a pressure to perform, to be good at them, to be the best we can be, whether it's relationships or job, parenting, whatever. And we all experience that, that pressure to perform, and the same techniques that we, that we're working with elite athletes or elite performers. I mean, I work with musicians or I work with, business executives. The same pressure that they're under applies to us all.
Now, getting back to the Olympics itself, as I said, I've seen you quoted or interviewed in every media on every channel during the course of the Olympics. And some of the things that came up, I wanted to touch base on. First of all, I also work as an anchor at Global News. And one of the pieces that we used that involved you was the music that sometimes players or athletes would use to prepare for an Olympic event.
That's for sure. I mean, music really touches our emotions. And one of the ways of dealing with pressure is to really get into the right emotional state. And I always encourage the athletes I work with to have, a couple of sets of tunes, to have some music that really can lift them, that's, more pump music, more driving music. And also to have some music that can kind of chill them out, that helps them to relax and stay smooth. I mean, you could look at it another way is that I'm always talking to them that there's two levels of emotional intensity when they're competing. And one level is attack, and the other level is smooth. And if we attack too much, if we're too aggressive, of course, we don't perform well. And if we're too smooth or too comfortable, sometimes we don't perform well. I mean, if you think of a downhill ski racer, if they attack the hill too aggressively, they crash, they wipe out. If they're too smooth and too relaxed coming down, they don't generate a competitive time. So attack and smooth are two really good states of mind to regulate, and music really represents it. I mean, we can use music to really get energized, and we can use music to really calm down.
Now, another thing that you talk about, I saw another piece, I guess you did with the CBC, talking about the men's hockey team. And this is another interesting aspect, the Canadian men's hockey team. Here is a team that was, first of all, thumped by the United States, and that takes a bit of the wind out of someone's sails. They bounce back from that. They also bounce back from the fact that with less than 30 seconds to go in the final game, the game is tied, and they were 30 seconds away from a gold medal. They have to regroup and bounce back from that as well. What's the mindset that goes through two situations like that?
Well, I mean, I think that, I mean, actually, it's interesting because I'm over here in Switzerland just helping a team get ready for their playoffs. And it's a team that's it's been very successful, but in the last 2 years, we're knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. And it's easy to focus on the negative. And certainly, you know, there are some people who are focused on that. You've got to train people to focus on those elements that help them to be at their best. It's like one of the exercises that I mention in the book, and it's an exercise I do with the athletes, is I say, when I play my best eye, and I want them to be able to put in four or five key things they do when they play their best. You want people thinking about what you have to do. You know, what are the ABCs that I've got to nail for me to be successful, for us to be successful? And it's interesting because a lot of coaches, especially coaches who are under pressure, will focus on the negatives. They'll focus on what people shouldn't do or what they did that was wrong, instead of really maintaining that focus on what we've got to do to be the best we can be. So I think in those pressure situations, you lose a close game or it goes to overtime and, you know, sudden death, you're reminding people, we're capable, we're talented, we're prepared, you know what to do, you work at you being your best. I mean, it's a kind of discipline, and it's a discipline you train. It's funny because Bobby Knight, the basketball guru, he once said that he thought discipline was the key to being a successful athlete. And he defined discipline, Peter, as he said, do what has to be done when it has to be done, and do it to the best of your ability, and do it that way all the time. So you're telling people really to zone in on being the best they can be, and you're training them to talk that way to themselves, to visualize themselves performing that way, and then, you know, then executing.
Now, one of the things here in this country that got a lot of headlines was the Own the Podium campaign. Yeah. Now, besides the actual funding that came in from the Own the Podium campaign, what is the psychological aspect of just focusing on that term, Own the Podium?
I don't like it. I was thinking about it after the Olympics, just after the Olympics ended, because I was asked the question a number of times and I came out with different things. I don't think it's in the Canadian character to walk around saying we're going to own the podium. And if you do say that kind of stuff, you damn well better walk your talk. So I think Canada did very, very well. It was a very credible performance in the Olympics. It's something to be proud of. And I think if we would have just removed the W, so it would have been on the podium. You know what I said? I said in an interview with Sports Illustrated that we should call it, you know, we belong on the podium. That kind of stuff is fine, you know, but saying we're going to own it, you know, we're a more conservative nation. We're somebody who tends to, work hard, do our thing, and then maybe, you know, pat ourselves a bit on the back. We're not like our neighbors to the south, who are more inclined to be a little more braggarts. And it was funny because when we said, you know, when this thing came out about own the podium, I remember one of the American athletes said, you can own it, but we'll rent it from you for a month. you can have it after that. And it's, I think Clara Hughes said, spoke about it Clara is an amazing woman and a great athlete. And, she won that medal in speed skating. She won the only athlete in Canada ever to win summer and winter games medals, and very bright woman. And she said she didn't like it. And she said, it's not about owning the podium. It's for the athletes. It's going out there and being the best you can be. And you want to represent your country well, and you want to represent yourself. But it's not about owning the podium. It's, you know, I didn't like the phrase. And I think, as you said, if it's something that was put together as something to represent a putting more money into sports in certain ways, fine. Mm. But if I was an athlete competing, I would not want somebody around saying we're going to own the podium.
Got just about a minute. I got to ask this last question before we let you go, and that is one of the things I found very interesting where you were also quoted talking about the difference between bronze, silver, and gold, and the mindset of people who win. Actually, bronze medalists seem to be happier than silver medalists?
Well, I think it's true in some cases. I mean, the woman who was making that point was really referring to a situation where a woman had previously won gold. And she, you know, won silver and she was disappointed. And I saw there were a number of cases of athletes who, you know, didn't even expect to be on the podium and won silver and were just, you know, elated. You know, it's like if you really aspire to win gold and you're close, you know, maybe you're happier. It's less disturbing that you didn't win gold by winning bronze. But I think it depends very much on the athlete and their situation. The one thing I thought you were going to bring up was I did one interview on sex in the games, you know, how close to the performance was sex advisable. I mean, they were certainly asking all kinds of questions around performance. And, you know, that was one. And it reminded me there was always that dialogue. Jake LaMotta, before he fought Sugar Ray Robinson, always said, not till I beat the champ. And Reggie Jackson, when he was in his heyday, always said, as close to game time as possible.
The book is entitled Performing Under Pressure, and that's an interesting term now considering what we just talked about, but Performing Under Pressure, Gaining the Mental Edge in Sport and Business. It's written by Dr. Saul Miller. And Saul, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again.
It's a pleasure, Peter Anthony, and anytime.
Dr. Saul Miller, author of Performing Under Pressure, Gaining the Mental Edge in Sport and Business. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. That's thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0029, and you'll find links to Saul's website plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca where you can order the book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on The Stuff File program, we'll meet the greatest employee in the world. Plus, we'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But let's get right back to the stuff here on The Stuff File program. 41-year-old Richard Cole of Ontario was a big fan of the TV show Survivor Man. That's the popular Discovery Channel reality show featuring survival expert Les Stroud living in the wilderness without food, shelter, or equipment. So Richard thought he'd give it a try and trekked out into the Ontario wilderness, bringing little more than a few supplies and the skills he had learned from watching the TV show. He also left behind a note asking his landlady to call police if he failed to return by Sunday night. She got to make that call on Monday. On Wednesday, Cole was found dead in a marshy, snowed-in area. Cause of death is believed to be hypothermia. Survival instructor Gino Ferry says shows like Survivor Man make for excellent entertainment, but should never substitute for real-world training. She believes these types of shows have skewed the public's perception of how dangerous it really is to live off the land, prompting inexperienced campers to venture into the woods with a bolstered sense of confidence. In other words, folks, don't try this at home. While I agree with her in theory, this story is what we like to call the Darwin file, because the tree of life is often self-pruning. There are people on this planet who will just simply do dumb things because they can do dumb things, and they'll find a way to remove themselves off the planet. Now, in the case of this guy, come on, he was 41 years old. He's not like he's 16, trying to think he can do something he can see on television. He's 41 years old. He should know better. Obviously, he didn't. He's no longer with us. Case closed. Moving right along. We go to Arlington, Washington. State troopers say a man is lucky to have only minor injuries when he crashed his car into a barn after his steering wheel popped off while driving. Trooper Keith Leary said the 59-year-old man was driving his 1978 Buick on Thursday afternoon on State Route 530 when his steering wheel came off. The car left the road, went down an embankment, up the other side, and crashed into a barn. The man narrowly escaped a power pole and several small barns with baby cows inside. Baby cows, those would be called calves, wouldn't they? Okay, anyway. Rescuers said it's a miracle the man suffered only minor neck pain in the accident. The farm's owner said the car destroyed the farm's refrigeration and milking area and happened right as 140 cows were about to be milked. There you go. Under the headline of Bright Ideas, Lenoir County, North Carolina's sheriff's deputies raided a suspected marijuana farm in January and learned that the grow operation was all underground. The 60 live plants were being cultivated inside an abandoned school bus, which had been completely buried using several backhoes, accessible by a tunnel, and with a garage built on top of it. You gotta admit, that's somewhat ingenious. They got caught, but give them points for style and effort. On to St. Petersburg, Florida. A monkey that has eluded capture in the Tampa Bay area for more than a year has again escaped from Florida wildlife officials. Authorities were called into the neighborhood in St. Petersburg when the rhesus macaw monkey was spotted. It was twice hit with tranquilizer darts, but got away by ducking behind a drugstore and a church. Wildlife rehabilitator Vernon Yates says the tranquilizers don't appear to have any effect on the animal, though officials have increased the dosage each time they've used the drug on the monkey. Yates says the monkey is smart, even stopping to check traffic before crossing a busy street. Officials didn't say how the monkey got loose. They say it isn't considered a threat to humans, though. Well, first they can't seem to catch Osama. Now they can't catch a monkey. Sad. Really sad. Okay, still with animals, we go to Santa Fe, Texas. The bad luck of a stuck duck changed when firefighters in Santa Fe rescued the bird wedged in a chimney. I just want to say that again. The bad luck of a stuck duck. Oh, yes, anyway. Fire Chief Tommy Anderson said the homeowner heard the bird and lit a fire, hoping the duck would get out on its own from the open top chimney. Roast duck. Anyway, Anderson said the plan backfired when it filled her house with smoke. Firefighters, who were summoned around 5 p.m. Wednesday, determined the bird was too big to get free on its own. Anderson said the fire was put out, the damper was opened, and a wing was hanging out. The chief said a firefighter reached into the lower part of the chimney, grabbed the duck, and pulled the animal out. Anderson said the duck was taken outside, and it flew away. So much for dinner. On to London, speaking of birds. Britons love to wake up with the sound of bird tweeting or warbling. According to a poll which showed that birdsong is the most popular alarm tone after the traditional beep. Although the beep led the way, birdsong was ahead of church bells, chimes, World War II sirens, and dogs barking. Who wants an alarm clock that sounds like World War II sirens? Besides older members of the royal family. By contrast, the least popular tunes were violins, screeching, and kettle whistling. The songbird, as muse, has enriched our cultural life for centuries, and in some cases, it's been said it has made life worth living, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Birds said in a statement. Really? Wow. The poll was carried out by British digital radio maker Pure, whose latest model provides access to 365 alarm tones. That's one for every day of the year. With the exception, of course, of leap year. On to Berlin. A woman in Germany phoned police after hearing suspicious noises in her flat. But much to her embarrassment, officers found the source was a vibrator. The noise was so loud and strange, even over the telephone, that police decided to send a patrol car around to the scene of the crime. Daringly, and with the occupier's permission, one of the officers opened the drawer of the wardrobe where the noise was coming from. Underneath some clothes, he found a very personal, battery-operated object, which had obviously been switched on, or at least switched on itself. The tenant's face abruptly changed color. Police then said that they wished her a very nice evening, and they left. Batteries not included, your mileage may vary. Okay, finally, in this section of the Stuff File program, one more story before we get to our next guest. Under the headline of Didn't Think Ahead, two men tied up employees at a recycling plant in Chicago in December, intending to take away the ATM on the premises, which is normally used to pay people who bring in scrap metal. However, the two men fled empty-handed after realizing that they were not strong enough to carry the 250-pound machine out to their truck. That sounds rather goofy and silly, but believe it or not, those two clowns don't make the idiot of the day. And we'll get to the idiot of the day a little later on. What those two guys need, really, is a job. They need to get gainful employment, as opposed to trying to break into some place and steal things when they're not really good at that. But I digress. And gainful employment, that leads to our next guest. The greatest employee in the world is up for hire and accepting offers. Brett Rounceville, who spent some time traveling around the United States and crossing things off of his bucket list, is now home after his long adventure, and he's unemployed. He's got a website called greatestemployeeintheworld.com, and he joins us via Skype-to-Skype communication. Hi, Brett. How are you?
I'm doing great, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's nice to talk to you again. We spoke to you 2 years ago when I did the old radio show. And at that time, I remember you were described as a self-professed unemployed vagrant on a crazy crusade to complete 50 tasks. And so we got up, we caught up with you somewhere in Michigan. How did the trip go?
Yeah, that was a very memorable interview on my part, actually. I did tons and tons of radio interviews while I was traveling, and that one sticks out in my mind pretty clearly because I was literally hanging out of the window of a lighthouse trying to get reception to talk to you. But it went great. I was traveling for almost 2 years. It took me to do all 50 of the items on my list, but I finally crossed them all off, and I've been home for about almost a year now.
Now, we should mention, for those who don't remember from the old radio program or didn't hear the old radio program, you had crisscrossed the country about 8 times on that mission, and at least 8 times, and you also refused to spend money on lodging.
That's right. Yeah, I spent a lot of nights in bus stations and on the occasional park bench, but for the most part, it was just really kind strangers that put me up. I slept on a lot of couches.
Okay, so you traveled all around the world, actually all around the United States. Did you go beyond the United States, by the way?
North America, mostly
all
the US
North America.
And Canada.
Okay, so you traveled all through North America, and what did that experience teach you or do for you, or how did it change you?
More than anything else, it taught me, one, how to be uncomfortable, and two, just the astonishing amount of kind strangers there are that are out there, and I really don't think that we give people enough credit.
So now, flash forward to 2010, you started this website, greatestemployeeintheworld.com, and I believe you are now letting companies basically battle it out to have you on their staff. So what are you looking for as far as the job is concerned, and what are you qualified to do?
Well, the project's really similar to some of the employment contests that have been happening for the last year. The big one that started all off was the best job in the world, which was when New Zealand was running a contest for a job. So this is kind of flipping that idea on its head. And basically, companies can show up to the website and they post a one-minute video about their company and then the job description and whatever perks might happen to be involved. And they're basically entering in a contest to win me as their employee, and then the viewers of the site will be voting on who gets to employ me, basically.
How long has the site been up and running, and how did you come up with this idea?
It's actually only been up for about 3 days, but I will tell you that unemployment is a great motivator. When you spend enough time staring at Craigslist ads all day, then you start to come up with better ideas pretty quickly.
Okay, so again, back to one of my previous questions, what are you qualified to do, and what are you looking for?
I'm just looking for something really unique. That really how this all came about is, one, I was unemployed, and two, I didn't have a documentary project to work on anymore like Amtrekker, so I decided to kind of try to combine the two. So what I'm really hoping for is to find a company that needs me. I'm not saying I'm the greatest employee in the world in all circumstances by any stretch. And for that matter, I shouldn't be allowed anywhere near a pediatric hospital. Fact. Don't let me in. But there are plenty of companies that I would be great for. And I think most of them are the ones that are small to medium-sized companies that really just can't find their footing in this new social media world that we have. And so ostensibly what the greatest employee in the world is a buzz machine, and I can create this buzz. I'm basically running an advertising campaign for someone that I haven't met yet, and hopefully I'll be able to step in, and it'll be a win-win situation where I'll get to do this great thing and have this fun documentary experience outlining a job for a company that could really use the exposure.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you spent a lot of time traveling around, being unemployed and being your own person, doing what you wanted to do and going where you wanted to go. Would you find it difficult being someone's employee?
I sincerely hope not. I can totally see where you're coming from, but I did really enjoy my position at Disney before I left to start traveling. So I don't see it being a problem as long as it's a company that has like a respectable corporate vision of some kind, a company that I can get behind, I think, is what I would be looking for. But I mean, again, the viewers are going to be choosing most of what happens. I'm only going to be choosing from the final four.
And what did you do for the Mouse House?
I was a designer for the California theme parks, the two parks and the three hotels. So I did a lot of set design for rides and some props and a lot of holiday decor.
Now,
like that.
As you say on the website, greatestemployeeintheworld.com, people are going to choose your next job. You're going to choose from the final four. What happens if, let's say, in the top 20, there's something in there that you really, really like? Are you still going to let strangers choose for you?
Well, the way I set it up is the voters are actually going to choose the top seven. And then because there is some information that I'll have that the viewers won't, like I didn't list salaries or anything like that because I wanted small companies to be able to compete with large companies as far as the viewers were concerned. I didn't want any of that to get in anyone's heads. So they're going to choose top seven, and then I'll choose three wild cards. So of the 10 finalists, three will be of my choosing, and then the other seven by the voters. And then I'll interview those top 10 finalists and post those videos on the website for one more week of voting, and that is how it will be narrowed down to the final four. And frankly, if it gets narrowed down to the final four and they're not one of my top choices, tough. For 6 months, I'll be doing something less interesting than I would have hoped.
Now, are you willing to relocate just about anywhere this job might take you?
Oh, yeah. Literally, absolutely anywhere in the world. On the video I posted on the site, I said I would go dig ditches in Siberia for 6 months. And that's the honest truth. If that's what it comes down to, then I'm happy to try it out.
You know, you put something like that out there, it might just happen. Be careful.
I know that to be true.
I also understand that, by the way, just in case you're interested, they haven't gotten a lot of the buildings ready for the Olympics in Sochi in Russia. They haven't even started
really?
A lot of those buildings. So, you know, there's only 4 years to get this done before the next Winter Olympics. You might want to look there.
Never been to Russia. Sign me up.
There you go. So, again, the website is greatestemployeeintheworld.com. Is this something that you're going to be considering for long term? In other words, is this a job that you, whatever job it will be, Will this be a job that you're looking at long term, or do you have a timetable as to something else you want to do in the future?
I'm absolutely willing to consider it, but I set it at an initial 6-month contract for everyone's sanity, just in case things don't work out the way anyone might hope it does. So 6 months will be the first contract, but if it's a fantastic job that I love doing, there's no reason to stop.
Okay, so if there's a potential employer out there in the world listening to this right now, and they think they have the perfect job for you, what exactly do they have to do?
All they have to do is head over to greatestemployeeintheworld.com, or if you're prone to carpal tunnel, the acronym works too, GEITW.com. And you'll go to the submit button, and you'll post a 1-minute video and a job description and the job perks. And then I'll give you a call within 48 hours. And if you're serious, we'll be posting the job right there on the site. And I think the cool thing is, even if they don't make it to the finalists, to the finals, or if they don't win, it's still some great free exposure. There's tons of people visiting the site right now. I've been doing a lot of press, and so people will see that video no matter what.
And in the meantime, how are you paying the rent?
Right now, I still actually make a little bit of money off of Amtrekker, though not nearly what I was making while I was traveling. And I fill in the gaps by teaching GRE courses for Kaplan.
Excellent. Well, an enterprising young man you are, and another interesting idea. I remember when we had you on the program 2 years ago, it was fun talking to you then. It's equally fun talking to you now. Again, the website, greatestemployeeintheworld.com. I thank you very much, Brett, for taking the time to be on the program with us once again.
Oh, no. Thank you so much, Peter. It was fun.
Brett Rounceville, potentially the greatest employee in the world. You can check out his website at greatestemployeeintheworld.com. You'll find the link at my website, thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
If you're into the paranormal, then you're into Don Ecker and Dark Matters.
Something I have been immersed in for 20 years. Lunar research on items known as lunar transient phenomena. For over 400 years, world-class astronomers have been observing strange sights, lights, flashes, and other things on the moon.
Provocative topics, listeners' calls, and interesting guests.
Guest, Mr. Alan Sturm.
On my website, I have a list of 100 or so lunar conspiracy theories. I had to kind of come to terms with one of them that I hadn't really thought about.
It's the kind of show that might keep you up at night.
Speculation is, at some time in our past, or perhaps even today, there is another presence on the moon. And I'm not talking about indigenous lunar folks. I'm talking about a space base by somebody else on the far side of the moon.
Dark Matters with Don Ecker, exclusively on CyberStationUSA.com.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
Gosh, golly, willikers, gee, I got to tell you, I'm really, I'm doing okay. I'm very busy, very busy, very busy. Did I mention I'm very busy?
Well, wait a minute. Weren't you unemployed?
Yeah, but I'm doing more work these days for more money. Gosh, I love America. Oh, man, it's great. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Right now, in fact, I'm talking to you. I was covering an event, and the internet in the hotel in which I was working seems to have gone out of... What's wrong with it? It's just gone nuts. It's not working. So I ran to another hotel.
Ah, okay.
So I could read off my computer.
Okie dokie, sir.
What does that tell you? That's called
dedication.
Really putting my all into the show. It's dedication. That's
absolutely.
What it is.
So what is it you're covering?
Oh, I've covered a couple of party conventions lately, a Republican Party gathering in St. Charles, Missouri, just outside of St. Louis. and one here in Jefferson City, the Libertarian Party Convention. Needless to say, the Libertarians are less organized, but they're more fun to watch.
Okay. And yet, you managed to find the time to have stories for us, and I really appreciate that. So what do you have
Indeed,
for us?
That's what I do. That's what I do.
So what do you have for us this week?
Okay, let's see. Dateline, Joplin, Missouri.
That'd be the show me state.
It sure would. It's a state I live in, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Minutes after getting an alert to watch for a stolen $20,000 diamond ring, a jeweler in Joplin called police when a couple walked in trying to sell it. "We stalled and kept weighing and measuring it," said store owner L.T. Bonnie Newton, who's 87 years old, by the way. The couple tried to leave just as police arrived. Officers searched the man but couldn't find the ring. Then he started coughing, and they kept questioning him, and he kept coughing. As officers watched, the man coughed up the ring. Cleon Harris, who's 23, and Brianna Johnson, who's 19, were arrested and charged with receiving stolen property.
Lovely. Simply lovely.
Theft always has a familiar ring to it, doesn't it?
Ooh, and a pun, too.
Oh, a pun to boot. Wow, oh boy, I ought to be destroyed. Dateline, Mason, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye,
oh. There's that song. It's the Buckeye State.
Yeah, I used to live there, you know.
Oh, I remember.
Surprised how many people are listening to this show now. People I never even thought would listen, but hey, who knows?
Yeah, faith is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
It really is. It's wonderful. Even people who don't live in Ohio, even people who live here in Missouri.
Yes.
To all the people listening in Missouri, hi. Tanya Parrish, who's 43, says her husband, Ed Mitchiff, was abusive. Parrish is from Mason, Ohio, said her preacher husband, whom she met on an internet dating site, put me through 4 years of hell. That's what we said. He kicked her, threatened her, listened in on her phone calls, and drove her friends and family away, like a job I used to have. Anyway, where was I going to go? It was my house, and then there were the cats, dozens of cats. I know somebody with lots of cats, but let's not go there. Anyway, he brought in strays. Too good a mood, Peter. He brought in strays for her to take care of, and then he committed suicide with a drug overdose, leaving her to rebuild her life with an estimated 65 cats. I'm so embarrassed by this, Parrish said. The newspaper calls her husband a poster child for avoiding internet romance. But Parrish told her story anyway, since, in her words, "I want other women to know that even though they're in an extreme situation like this, they should not give up hope." She's down to about 30 cats, by the way, and hopes to get rid of 23 more, and plans to keep 7. I think that's kind of good, you know? It's good planning there.
Wow.
Keep 7 cats.
Her husband was a preacher, huh?
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
Have you noticed that even though you and I both love religion, we seem to find stories on this program where they're religious wing nuts. What can I say? Luck of the draw, I guess.
Them, I don't.
Luck of the draw, I guess.
I just read the ones you send my way, Peter. Dateline, Memphis, Tennessee.
That'd be the volunteer state.
Yes, it sure would. Police said the mother of an elementary school student drank a 40-ounce bottle of malt liquor before brandishing a sword in her child's school. The woman, who's 32, apparently intended to confront the parents of another child who had been in a spitting match with her child the previous day. According to court records, an employee at Riverview Elementary School in Memphis reported a drunk woman armed with a sword was running through the halls of the school and had threatened to cut her. Officers who arrived at the scene retrieved a black cane that concealed the blade. The woman is charged with aggravated assault and having a weapon on school property.
Wow. Okay, now that woman was just literally nuts.
But, she was nuts.
But
yeah.
But she will notice that according to this story, at least from what you said, she has no religious affiliation.
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
None. Dateline, Des Moines, Iowa.
That'd be the Hawkeye State.
I hate you. 23-year-old Matthew Lee Scott thought his faith in the goodness of mankind had been restored after a motorist offered him a ride.
Did you say faith? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Just
faith in the goodness of mankind.
Okay. Go ahead.
Had been restored after a motorist offered him a ride.
Gotcha.
But it turned out his new friend was actually the Good Samaritan's evil twin. He was a bad Samaritan.
Uh-huh.
Scott had run out of gas when another motorist stopped and offered to take him to a gas station. According to Scott, after the tank was filled, the man suggested they ride around the vehicle. Shortly thereafter, the man turned evil. Evil, I tell you. And ordered Scott to withdraw $220 from an ATM machine. Well, now, why? Why $220? Why not $250? $300? Why $220? Anyway, the suspect then tried to get Scott to withdraw even more from the bank, but Scott said he was questioned by a teller, and the robber told him to drive away. The robber then jumped from Scott's car and disappeared.
Wow.
Hmm. How about that, huh?
Yeah.
Or as they would say in your neck of the woods in Canada, how boot that, eh? Dateline, Fairfax County, Virginia.
Oh, that'll be the Old Dominion.
I love the way you say that. I could never say it that way. Well, I could, but I'd be accused of being
yes.
racist or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to live there, you know.
I remember.
Yeah, I love Virginia, my favorite former state. A man allegedly pulled a gun on two men in the parking lot of an apartment complex in Fairfax County, apparently upset they were blocking his parking spot. The two men said they were legally parked and were conducting a fugitive investigation. They're U.S. Marshals. And the one standing outside the car was had his badge hanging around his neck to show one and all that he is a marshal. After a brief chase and struggle, the marshals arrested Jose Avila, who apologized profusely. Profusely, I tell you, and said he had never done anything like this before. This is what the marshals say in their report. Anyway, they recovered a loaded 9mm handgun. Avila, a former priest, is a well-known anger management counselor. In his first court appearance, Avila insisted he had pointed a cell phone, not a gun, at the marshals.
Yeah. You know, it's not a good idea to point anything at the marshals. Anything.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Because, you know, pointing things at the marshals, that just gets them angry.
It would get me angry.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, when I get angry, I'm like the marshals who might shoot you. When I get angry, all I do is take keyboard in hand and write a two-minute tirade. And I've done so today. May I tell you all about my two-minute tirade, Peter?
Tirade away.
Thank you. Well, as mentioned, it is time for that two-minute tirade. And today, I want to talk, rant, I guess, about holidays. No, I'm not talking about traditional holidays that are accepted by just about everybody. I'm talking about the quasi-holidays. You know, the holidays that are days off for people in government, but not for anyone else. Recently, here in the good old U.S. of A., we had the wonderful holiday of President's Day, which is a holiday for people all across the country. President's Day came from what used to be the holidays of Washington's birthday and Lincoln's birthday. Many of the states that had separate holidays for Washington and Lincoln rolled them into President's Day when the Martin Luther King federal holiday was added in the 1980s. But some states, like my home state of Missouri, not only added MLK Day, these states kept Washington and Lincoln's birthdays, even though it's only government workers who have the days off. Hey, look, I'm not against giving a government worker the day off, but a state cannot conduct business if all government offices are closed on a day in which the rest of the community is up and running. It's ludicrous, I tell you, ludicrous. And it's not the only holiday. In October, we have Columbus Day, or as folks north of the border call it, Canadian Thanksgiving. If you work for the government, you have a day off. But if you're a regular schmo, you not only have to work, but you can't even change your license plates or call to get tax information. It's absurd, I tell you. Absurd! Now that I think about it, I guess I do have something against these workers having these quasi-holidays off. What this country needs is more people working, not more people sitting on their butts.
Well, Steve, you know, you only need
one day
off.
I haven't even had that lately.
Because that one day off, that would be Sunday. The Lord's Day.
And I will be off this Sunday.
Ah, yes.
The Lord's Day.
Okay.
Yes, I will. That's right. That's the way it's planned.
Steve, how can people find you, by the way?
Oh, you can get in touch with me at SteveWalsh2010, that's right, the name and the year, at gmail.com.
Excellent.
How's that?
Excellent. And Steve?
Yes, sir?
Say those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, but we do have time for an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
The Israeli army called off a raid in Palestinian territory after a soldier posted details, including the time and place, on Facebook, according to Israel's army radio. The soldier, since relieved of combat duty, described in a status update how his unit planned a clean-up arrest raid in a West Bank area. Facebook friends then reported him to military authorities. I don't know this guy's name. I don't know this guy's rank. But this guy is a first-class idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I hope you've enjoyed it. Program number 0029. You can find a lot of information on the website. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find all the information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding number of this program, which, as I mentioned, is 0029. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PA Holder and Twitter at twitter.com/PA Holder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including cyberstationusa.com and World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.